For a few minutes this morning, I want to talk about an account here in Mark chapter 6. It is a miracle of Jesus, a miracle that's unique in the New Testament, unique in the sense that it's the only miracle recorded in all four Gospels. And I think that means something because, as you know, the Gospels are four different accounts of Jesus' life, and each is written from a different perspective to perhaps a different audience for different purposes at different times. And so it says something that there is only one miraculous event that Jesus performs that each of those four writers thought was appropriate to include in his account. And that is the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. So this morning, I just want to think through that miracle for a few minutes, see what it meant to the disciples at the time, and then what it might mean for us today. And hopefully by doing that, we'll gain some insight into the very special nature of this miracle, the message behind it, and why it has such an important place in Scripture. Now, the miracle is recorded in Matthew 14, Luke 9, and John 6, as well as here Mark 6, but we're going to stick with Mark predominantly just for the ease of staying in one place. But later on, if you want to flip to those other passages, that's where they are. So we're going to start in Mark chapter 6 in verse 30. Mark 6, verse 30. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. So by way of background, Mark gives us a little bit of idea of what's going on here, but all the writers explain what's going on. This miracle is done at a time really of great tiredness and difficulty for Jesus and his disciples. If you were to flip back to Matthew's account, Matthew chapter 14, you realize that just prior to this miracle taking place, Jesus had been rejected in his hometown of Nazareth, and his cousin John the Baptist had been beheaded, and Jesus had sought a desolate place to be by himself, but for better or for worse, had been followed by the crowd. Mark adds, as well as Luke adds, that this is also right after the 12 disciples had returned to Jesus after Jesus had sent them out to do some preaching. If you remember, Jesus had sent them out with nothing, no food, no money, no help from Jesus himself. He sent them off by themselves to go preach and teach and to perform miracles themselves. So Jesus is following up from a time of personal difficulty and tiredness. The apostles then also as well had just gone out and on their own tried some things, and they had returned to Jesus perhaps looking for a break, and the crowd has now followed them and is gathered around them. John adds in the Gospel of John that this was right after some Jews had also sought to kill Jesus for healing on the Sabbath and calling God his Father. So this wasn't, if you will, a time where Jesus is kind of strolling through the countryside. He and his apostles well rested with no opposition. This, in fact, was a time where they themselves were likely very tired and hungry, and the crowd has been following them for more assistance. And verse 34, we can see Jesus' response to this situation. Verse 34, Mark 6, "And when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, 'This is a desolate place. The hour is now late. Send them away into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat.'" So Jesus, with that kind of that background of everything he's dealing with, he sees this crowd. His response to the crowd is to have compassion because he sees them as sheep without a shepherd. The disciples' response is a little bit mixed. It seems at the beginning they probably shared that the compassion Jesus had, but understandably so, they get to a point where they try to cut things off. And I don't think that's simply because the disciples are, you know, not interested in helping people, but you think back all that they've gone through over the past several days, themselves being very tired from being sent out preaching along their own, worried about the death of John the Baptist, all these things. They tell Jesus, you know, in other words, we can't sustain this, is what they say. It's time to take a break. It's late. We understand it's important to be compassionate. These folks are far away from home. We're all tired. Let's let these people go get something to eat. And so Jesus turns to his disciples and gives them a test. Verse 37, he answered them, "You give them something to eat." In fact, if you look in John's account, John adds that Jesus did this to test his disciples specifically. That this wasn't just a comment that he made for no purpose, but he's trying to see what they would say. Like, do you have anything to give to them? And they said to him, "Shall we go buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?" Should we spend, you know, almost all the money that somebody would make in the course of a year and feed this large crowd? And he said to them, "Well, how many loaves do you have? Go and see." And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So Jesus tests his disciples. He says, "What are you going to do? Why don't you guys give them something to eat?" And their response is, "Well, maybe nothing." And so he asks the second question, "Well, what do you have?" So they run off and they look and they ask around and they find that there's a child with 5 loaves and 2 fish, a boy who seemed willing to share what he had with the disciples, and disciples who'd seem willing to bring it to Jesus. You know, they didn't just push him away and say, "Ah, that's not what we need." They brought it to Jesus, but they kind of said, "Well, but this is kind of all we got." And we seemed unsure what to do next. And so verse 41, taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, Jesus looked up to heaven, said a blessing, and broke the loaves, and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces of the fish, and those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. So Jesus performs a miracle using the boy's food. The disciples distribute it to all the people. And then the disciples, it seems, each have a basket to go pick up leftovers. It says there's 12 baskets that they gather. So I'm just imagining perhaps one for each of the disciples. They went around to all the different groups and they filled up all these baskets of leftover food. And so Jesus had tested the disciples by saying, "Well, what do you think we should do?" Maybe they weren't sure. So he said, "Okay, well, what do you have?" They brought it to Jesus. And after the test, there's the lesson. And the lesson for them was a lesson in God's multiplication table. So you all probably remember multiplication tables from when you were in school. Maybe even if you aren't somebody who loves math, you had to just trudge through multiplication tables. I don't even know if that's still used in schools today or homeschooling parents use that. But I remember when I was in school, you had the table across the top, 0 to 10, down the side, 0 to 10, and you just had to fill in the grid. And sometimes we were timed having to fill in the grid. And I liked math as a kid. It was kind of fun. There were other people who didn't like math. But, you know, the grids, they weren't that bad, right? 0's easy. 1's really easy. 2 always makes sense. 3 and 4 are kind of small. 5, very easy. I always liked 5. 10's I always liked. But there was always the kind of 6, 7, 8... that when you were learning multiplication, that wasn't as intuitive to most people, right? You start thinking, "Oh, I don't really know about these kinds of things." And so you may go kind of fast for a while, and then you get to like 6 times 7 and 6 times 8. And sometimes they would rhyme, right? 6 times 8 is 48, and so I'd always remember something like that. Other times it made no sense. You just had to tough it out and memorize. But there was always one thing that everybody loved. There was one row that everybody in the class loved, whether you loved or hated math, and that was row 0, right? Row 0. Row 0 was easy because anything times 0 is 0. And so everybody always got that part right. And really, the challenge with that row is to write as many 0's as fast as you could so you had more time in the test to deal with the 6's and the 7's and the 8's that you'd actually have to think about. So that was easy, right? Multiplication, anything times 0 is 0. Well, Jesus here teaches what I heard one preacher refer to helpfully as God's multiplication, which is anything times God equals abundance. It's like anything times zero is always zero. Anything times God is always abundance. And so whether it was 5 loaves and 2 fish, 50 loaves and 20 fish, it didn't really matter. Anything that these people brought to God, you could bank on it, right? Anything times God would be abundance. Whatever the disciples brought to God would satisfy the need of the hour. And I imagine the disciples themselves learned that lesson pretty well. Not just watching it happen, right? But after everybody eat, I don't know how long it took, but after everybody had finished eating, the disciples carrying a basket, you imagine walking up and down the rows of 5,000 men plus women and children, you know, going all around these groups, lugging a basket with you. Okay, piece of bread from you, piece of fish from you, right? Piece of bread from you, walking all over, maybe having to put this thing down when it's 10, 15, 20 pounds, right, of bread you're carrying, leaning on the ground and kind of resting. You can imagine if you were one of those disciples, setting your basket down, maybe your hands getting a little sore, right, blistering, carrying this thing, and looking around and saying, okay, I get it. Jesus is going to make more food than this whole group of thousands and thousands of people can eat. And here I am, stuck carrying the leftovers. I get it, right? There was nothing to worry about. Jesus had the answer. All we had to do was be obedient, and he would bring about the results. So pretty amazing miracle. So that's the question then to kind of consider this morning is, why is this miracle so important? Jesus does a lot of fascinating miracles, but why would this be the only one that is included in every single gospel? I don't know for sure, but my thought is perhaps it's because this miracle so dramatically illustrates a key principle, and that is this, that God has seen fit to accomplish his work through us, regular old people. And if we have the faith to obey him and dedicate what we have to him, he has the power to turn our efforts into abundance. I think that lesson was so important. It made such an impact on the disciples, because think about the lives that they lived after this. After a few short years, Jesus would be gone. They would be on their own as the church is growing, and they would be responsible for carrying on the work of Christ in the face of tremendous difficulty and persecution. And I'm sure time and again they returned back to that moment when they thought, oh, you remember back all that time ago where we were tired, we were confused, we thought, hey, we just got to call this off. There's nothing we can do to help these people. And Jesus showed us, if you just find the smallest bit that you have, that he would turn that into an abundance that would satisfy the problem in front of us. And how much more spiritual abundance would they be able to see God and the Holy Spirit bringing about in their lives in the early church? So what about us today? How does this miracle impact us? Well, we are servants of God as well, and we honor him and serve him by serving others, developing spiritual habits, fighting temptation, teaching children, holding families together, maintaining our integrity in the business world, and working to be faithful stewards of our lots in life. And as we go out to do that work, I think we're not too different than the disciples in Mark chapter 6. Perhaps some here this morning are tired from a period of focused service to God. Others might be persecuted by the enemies of God. Perhaps still others grieving the loss of a fellow servant of God. And while we deal with those challenges, before us is a broken world, just like the broken world faced by the disciples, a world that is in desperate need of guidance from the Good Shepherd. And as we look around us at the challenges we may face personally, and the mass of people that are, just like Jesus said, sheep without a shepherd, we may begin to despair and think, well, there's really nothing we can do about this. But if we remember Jesus' question, what will you do? And then his second question, what do you have, we may begin to focus our efforts to a point of success. So we have our time, our talents, our health, our opportunities, resources, relationships. And I think if we've learned God's multiplication table, the only response to the question, what do you have, is, Jesus, what I have is yours. And you may feel like all you have to offer in God's service could fit inside a first grade boy's lunchbox. But if you're obedient with what you have, and you trust God with the results, and I think this miracle shows us we can be confident that He will multiply those things to His glory. And one day, whether it's in this life or the next, we will too will carry baskets of spiritual abundance thanks to the work that God has done. So that's it for this miracle, why it may be so important. And I hope that it's as encouraging to you as it is to me to think about the power of God and what He can do with the small things that we bring to Him and His service in this life. If you're here this morning and you need encouragement, that is one of the reasons that God has us meet every week. I'm convinced it's so that we can encourage one another to stay focused on what's true and what's right. And this morning you might be in a feeling like the disciples were, tired, run down, unsure how to deal with the work that's in front of you, you know you need to do. And if that's the case, please don't leave here this morning without seeking the advice and counsel and comfort of the fellow brothers and sisters around you. Or if you're here this morning and you are not a Christian, but you realize that you cannot do the work of this life on your own, especially the work of God, but you want to dedicate yourself to Him and begin to do that work of providing guidance to those who are without a shepherd, and you're ready to trust God with the results, understanding that what you bring to the table is nothing, right? That you're all unrighteousness, right, as we sing, but that in faith you can be obedient to Him and bring what you have in your life into His service and obey His commands. And you have the faith that He will bring about not only your salvation, but use you in His service. If you'd like to act on that faith and be baptized this morning, now would be an opportunity to take the steps that those disciples took back then. If we can help you in any way this morning, please let us know. Let's sing the song.